Welcome to the Travelling Signorita, episode 168. I have flown down to Melbourne to find Deepak Chopra because he is my idol, my guru, not just jumped on the Instagram bandwagon. I have been following this guy for about 3 decades now. Actually, when I was living in Melbourne, I was 20-something, a little lost, and I found a book called The 7 Spiritual Laws to Success. And Mr. Deepak taught me all about the law of detachment and the law of lots of other things. Tonight, he is actually at the convention center in Melbourne. Lo and behold, I just happened to be here this afternoon to interview a chef called Deepak Mishra, who is the executive chef at the Pan Pacific Hotel Doc 37 restaurant. And I come in here all excited going, where is Deepak Chopra? And we don't know where he's staying, but I feel like he's around here somewhere because he's performing tonight right next to my room. So that means I have to go. But for now, I'm going to be talking to the other Deepak. Hello, Deepak Mishra.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for letting me intro Deepak Chopra because I arrived at the hotel really excited to know that Deepak is giving his wisdom this evening across the road.
Absolutely.
But let's get back to where we are now. We're in the Pan Pacific Hotel. So firstly, can you tell us where we are in Melbourne? Because it's kind of a new precinct.
That's right. We are in South Wharf, just next to the Convention Centre and DFO as well, where you have your shopping thing going as well. This precinct has been there for over a decade now. Slightly hidden within the CBD, but if you look at the main CBD, this is fairly new, again, let's say, if decade is a new thing.
It's near the water, isn't it? Like, we're down near Docklands.
That's right. We are down in Docklands. You can just see the Yarra River next to the hotel as well. You can just walk into to the Yarra within a few metres from the hotel.
Yeah. Something fabulous. I just caught a free tram. So the cities in Melbourne, the trams in Melbourne are free. So I got it. I was up at the Grossi restaurant. So Guy Grossi hosted us today at Grossi Grill. We just had a fabulous long lunch, as only you can do at that end of town. It feels like you've arrived in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I have to get to the other side of town. Never fear, there's free trams with the ding ding and off you go. And I'm at South Wharf. I crossed a bridge.
Yes.
And I found this gorgeous hotel with really dark hues and wooden features. Let's talk a little bit about Pan Pacific as a brand and what made you come here.
Pan Pacific as a brand, it's a brand from Singapore. They've been in the hotel business for a very long time. We hold two brands, mainly within hotel. One is a Park Royal and one is Pan Pacific. Pan Pacific definitely is a top tier and classified as a top tier 5-star luxury hotels. And the company is from Singapore, the main portfolio you can see in Singapore having many hotels there. And my journey with Pan Pacific, this is my 7th year, second tenure within the company. I spent close to 5.5 years working in Melbourne and Singapore for the Pan Pacific Hotel Group. And now I'm back again for the Pan Pacific brand. And fortunate enough, I have worked with all the hotel brands Pan Pacific Hotel Group owns, like that is Park Royal Collection, and now Pan Pacific as well. Feel lucky to have this opportunity with the company. It's really true Asian hospitality, you can say, from the club and everything, and what we are looking to offer, and being an Indian born, to be honest, it's something I can correlate to the place I was born, really.
Yes, well, I usually start there and work forward, but because we're sitting in this hotel and I've just arrived, I'm a bit of an awe of Pan Pacific, so thank you for explaining that. Something that you said to me on the way in is that you like to create restaurants in hotels, which is not something that everybody does. Like, you know, sometimes restaurant hotels can be banquet style or breakfast or, you know, just kind of like an add-on. But is it really important to you when you work in a hotel to make the restaurant a real central feature?
Absolutely. Like, it's a belief what you have. When you're a passionate chef, it's there's no boundaries really. Now, or since I've been within the hotels like throughout my career over 25 years now, always my focus is been doing the restaurant food within the hotel, and that's how I've been trained as well. When I was working within hotel, many hotel brands as well, those days the hotel used to be two hat, three hat as well, doing the top-notch fine dining food, and having been worked and trained with many ex-Michelin star chef as well. That's where I picked up my style from those chefs and mentors as well, and which continued. And to be honest, within so many years, I never had any challenges that to classify hotels restaurant to be a very typical, what do you call it, format-driven hotels, like restaurant
actually,
as such.
I think it's something that's trending as well. You've been doing it for a long time, but someone like Chef Guy Grossi, who's like an icon in Melbourne.
True.
And he, because of the location and what he's built around his Little Italy that he's established in Melbourne, he's gone into a hotel in Brisbane. So
yes.
He's trialing that. And I can, he was talking to me about how he can see value in that. Firstly, you have a budget.
Yes.
Secondly, it's not just you know, on your own. You've actually got support of a big brand behind you. And thirdly, you have a ready-made clientele.
Totally. Like before joining back to Pan Pacific, I was part of the pre-opening and opening of a Sofitel hotel in Chadstone, and that's where we also introduced and had a freestanding restaurant chef to run a restaurant. Like Scott Pickett was there for many years,
yes,
running his restaurant called
Pastore.
Yes, Pastore. I was fortunate enough to be a part of.
Is that still open? That one.
The restaurant is still open. Unfortunately, Scotty is not the part of the rail restaurant anymore. So he's moved into other ventures.
Mm-hmm.
from there. And Scotty is a dear friend as well for nearly a very long time.
Another Melbourne icon.
Yes, yes, he's been a Melbourne icon and a very talented chef, and I have a lot of respect for him and what he does.
Did you work with Scott?
Fortunately, we trained together at the Windsor,
a
bit different time, but at the same iconic
Windsor.
Post that, yes. And we are definitely part of the Bocuse d'Or managing committee as well. He was a trainer for a coach for a very long time. He represented Australia as the Bocuse d'Or as a candidate as well.
Just explain what that is.
Bocuse d'Or is from Chef Paul Bocuse, the legend and the hero of Nouvelle Cuisine, you know. And that's when the competition started, which happens in Lyon in France, and which is considered to be the highest level of cooks competition in the world. And all many countries, they take part. We are fewer of the committee members like Chef Philip Michel, Scott Pickett, Tom Milligan,
Deepak Mishra.
I chair as a vice president of the committee as well. And we are definitely committee behind building up the Australian team, training them, and also generating the funds to send that team to Lyon in France as well. So we compete among the best, and we've been doing really well.
So obviously training is really important to you. And would you say that you are classically French trained?
That's right. I am classically French trained. To be honest, what got me to Australia is to learn the tricks of the trade of European cuisine. That's how I came to Melbourne.
Did you think of going to France for that?
Not really. Australia been in the world cuisine map, and very versatile, and Australian chefs are well regarded worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
They're not only best in European cooking and also their exposure to various other cuisine as well, because of the way the nature of the country as well, with the migrants and all those things. I like
that. Sorry, not to interrupt you there, but do you think that is indicative of Melbourne? Like, are you finding that that culture you're talking about, do you find it really strong in Melbourne town, per se?
I totally agree. Yes, to be precise, yes, it's very strong in Melbourne. When you visit to various suburbs within Melbourne, the cuisine changes. Mm-hmm. If you go going to Footscray, you have several like Vietnamese restaurant, mm-hmm. and the traditional Vietnamese cuisine can be experienced out there. Mm-hmm. And when you go to Sydney Road, you get that Lebanese and Middle Eastern cuisine.
Lygon
Street for Italian, and now evolving like some part of Footscray.
It's the map of migration, which is
totally.
Having grown up here, I've always been so proud of the multiculturalism, the integration in this city. But a lot of it's come down to food. Like the language has been through food.
Absolutely, that's what the culture of Melbourne, and that's one of the reasons. Being a chef, I traveled around the world, and always after doing one assignment overseas, got me back to Melbourne. And the reason what got me back to Melbourne is the culture, the food culture, produce, the people. They look forward to going out and dining.
100%, you know. They go out and dine everywhere here. They go to the footy, they go to food, they
yes.
have dinner. There's also they're patriotic about their city. You know, they love living here.
Totally.
And they love experiencing it. One thing I love about what you just said is you didn't mention weather. Okay, so people from other states, I live up north now, talk about the weather. I've arrived here today, the sun's shining, it's brisk, but we're all out having lunch.
Totally.
That's Melbourne in a nutshell.
That's Melbourne. In one day, you can see all the weather within the 24 hours. Within a couple of hours.
It obviously doesn't bother you, the weather.
Doesn't bother me at all. I think we have learned to adapt all the changes out here. There's a fun.
I think it's a ploy from the northern states to get them to migrate north, because Melbourne is all the sun's always shining when I'm here.
Yeah.
Maybe I bring the sun with me.
Totally.
So let's talk about where you were born and when you were brought up. Speaking of weather, you were born in India.
That's right.
On the East Coast.
That's right. I was born in the East Coast of India. That's a state called Orissa, mm-hmm. which is very close to Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was born, to a very non-hotelier family, for sure.
What was a young Deepak meant to do growing up?
So growing up, being a typical Indian family, either mm-hmm. you can be a doctor or an engineer. Maybe you can think of becoming a chartered accountant or a lawyer. My dad...
Very, very disciplined.
Very disciplined. My dad is an aeronautical engineer. My brother, he was into marine engineering. He was a captain in the Navy as well. Then okay. went to the business school and leading a corporate world at this moment. My grandparents been doctors and engineers and all those things as well. So that's
where. Were there any cooks in the family?
No, my mom definitely. That's something she did to raise a family and yep. a housewife, and that's what
but
she
do
did.
Do you think that's where you might have been intrigued as a young boy about what she was cooking? Did that interest you?
Always interest me. Her dedication and towards the family who were creating all this delicious meal and with the spices and everything. I was quite chubby then, of course, with my mom's.
How many people would she be cooking for each evening?
Each evening, my childhood days, my dad worked for the Ministry of Defense, so we lived in a very community, mm-hmm. And cooking for the family and the fellow friends and everything was part of the culture. So she cooks a few extra portions, and we take it to the friends and neighbor, and they send the food as well. So and she every day she's cooking about 10 or 12 people. And those days there was no refrigerator. Each meal is prepared fresh and consumed fresh, as well. And the gas cooking came in pretty late. I would say it was cooked in straight in charcoal.
Do you think as a young boy you would be enticed by the smells and the taste? Was it something back then that made you think I want to be a chef?
Yeah, like honestly speaking, food, I loved food. I loved eating. I loved what my mom did, you know. And then the TV culture started when you see all the TV chefs coming in. Those days, like, you see a couple of TV shows coming in. Mm. I don't know why I must have mentioned this million times in my career. I always got fascinated with this white chef's jacket. I don't know why. I always loved it. I always
it's
seen.
It's symbolic. I love that.
Yeah, I've seen myself wearing that jacket.
Yeah,
you know.
You visualized it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And that's something I always wanted to do. Like, yes.
I think Deepak Chopra would like that.
I swear.
The visualization.
Mr. Chopra, like, he's since I've been left India, when I had to say my name and people sometimes struggle. I said, I'm the same Deepak as the Mr. Deepak Chopra and the cricketer Deepak Patel. Those days, he was a very famous cricketer.
I feel like you've got a name in your own right, my friend. You've just told me you've got a podcast on Virgin, you've got a podcast on Deep in the Weeds. I'm probably the 30th podcast.
No. I still feel humbled and still.
So let's go back to that visualization of you in the white chef's jacket. How do you get from living on the East Coast in India, where you are destined to be an engineer or an accountant? How do you then make the leap?
So it so happened, finishing my school, I was studying economics.
To university to do economics?
Yes, I was in the university. I was studying economics. To get into some white collar job. One fine day I told my dad, this is not what I want to do. I want to get into hotel school. It wasn't easy at all. My dad didn't speak to me for a while. And
how long had you been into the economics degree for a couple of years?
So I was there for a good 1 year, and yep. I was fortunately doing well in economics. But that I couldn't correlate myself being in a white collar job, or being a professor, or getting into civil services.
So it's actually quite brave for your culture to stand up and do that, isn't it? To say I don't want to do this anymore.
Totally, it was quite brave, and it honestly speaking, it also looked like a disrespectful towards the elder, you know.
Sure.
That which comes to you're grown up with that, that you have to respect your elder, you have to say yes to what they say, all those things.
Yeah.
I just wanted to explain to my dad and I said, this is not what I want to do. And he couldn't really take it easily. But fortunately, my elder brother, who is again my biggest mentor, he came into the picture. He said, let him do what he wants to do, let him follow his heart. Mm. So he was traveling the world when he was in Merchant Navy, you know, and he supported me in there. So I went to hotel school, completed that. Then I said, I'm not able to get a pedigree what I want to achieve in cooking, European cooking. I want to go overseas, I want to learn the next level of European cooking. Then we started looking at Switzerland and Culinary Institute of America and all those things. Then William Angliss came into picture.
For those that don't know William Angliss, explain it.
William Angliss is one of the iconic hospitality and cooking school, been in Melbourne for very, very long time. And the school has produced many successful and well-known chefs around the world, and that had the biggest training kitchens and restaurants in Southern Hemisphere.
It's hospitality across the board too, isn't it?
That's right. It's a hospitality across the board, and now it has grown quite a bit as well. When my brother was in Melbourne, in SHIP, so he happened to come across William Angliss. Then he said, why don't you research about William Angliss? When I read about it, spoke to a few people, then I said, this is where I would like to go, you know. And then the culture, Australian culture, and the multicultural scene out here, that's something really excited me. And those days, it was not very common in William Angliss as well, overseas students coming in and studying cookery.
Talking 90s?
Yes, late 90s, I would say about 97 or so. Mm. So yeah, that's when nowadays...
That's when I left Melbourne.
Oh, yes.
1997.
Wow. Well, it seems like yesterday, yeah, you know. But that's when I landed in Melbourne, and that's when the real trade chefing experience and the training that started. Fortunately, I could get fantastic chef teacher who has been successful, what you call it, chefs around the world in restaurants and hotels and everything. And starting from them and learning the tricks of the trade as well, which was fantastic, and getting exposed to all the...
Even though it's a big city, like just being with Chef Guy Grossi, it's small in its cultural heart. You know, like everybody, anybody that's anybody, and I don't mean this in a famous way, knows and helps out everybody.
Totally.
It's a small cultural heart. Really.
Absolutely. It's very closely knitted city and the industry as well.
Yeah.
Everybody know each other, and we can definitely count on each other for whenever we need, as well as a chef's...
Not so much competition, it's more like collaboration.
Totally. You know, whenever there is a need or there is some help needed, definitely we can pick up the phone and call each other or bounce ideas or ask for any support or anything. We're definitely there. I think that's really good. And after COVID, to be honest, it has the bond has become much more stronger.
Yeah, I can see that already. Like, I came down, you know, in between the lockdowns to do some stories because Melbourne is my home. Doesn't matter how long I've left here. When I landed this morning, I still felt like it was home on the tarmac. And, you know, that was really tough in between those two lockdowns, and I managed to come down and I did a story over at Mövenpick, and then I came down again, and it was the second time I came down was even harder because it had been some carnage. There was some closures and people were just, you know, they were running out of energy. This time that I'm down, it's alive and kicking, and there is so much going on. New restaurants, new hotels, renovated restaurants, reopenings. You know, I was out at Northcote today. That's happening. I'm over in the South Hall. I feel like Melbourne is back. And I was talking to my brother about this, and I said, oh, do you think it's tourism? And he said, we don't even really notice that in Melbourne. Melbourne has so many big events every year that
yes.
are cemented on the calendar. And we as Melbournians get out and celebrate our city. So
whether
you're a tourist or not, it's not even part of that. It's about the fabric of this city is for it to support each other.
Absolutely. When you said Mövenpick, it's just tickled my sentiment, you know, because I was part of the pre-opening team of the Mövenpick Melbourne as well when I was working with the Akko Hotel.
Yes.
And yeah, it was really great being a part of the Miss Me restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, Miss Me was great. Yes, and I've done a podcast with our friend there.
Yes.
That was a hard one because they opened right on COVID.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And then had to close immediately. So
yes.
That was one of the ones that I was so happy to see it, you know, reopen. Also, you mentioned the Langham. That's a brand that I love.
Yes.
Tell me about your time at the Langham Hotel.
It was really great. And to be honest, I've spent nearly 7 years working with the Oberoi Group of Hotel. It's a very luxurious hotel group from India. They have hotels around the world, and they own the Windsor Hotel as well. That was really true Indian and Asian hospitality. And when I worked at the Langham for close to 3 years, I joined back in 2017, top of my head.
Mm.
So it was really great, a classic luxury. That's what I would describe.
Mm.
You know, the thing what Langham take pride, service with voice, those things.
Service with voice.
Poise. So which is really great. You know, that's where you can feel the classic luxury hospitality.
Mm.
I quite enjoyed, and always that got me back to working with the Oberoi Hotel of Windsor as well. Again, high tea always been very close to my heart.
I was gonna say, there's a high tea in you because I'm having one tomorrow, which I can't wait to try. I have a love of high tea, and here's one for you. I've just come back from Europe, in particular Greece, and I went to the Hotel Grand Britannia,
mm-hmm.
Which is Great Britain, basically, and it's in the middle of Athens, and it's in one of the most historical hotels, and they do a high tea on another level in a garden restaurant, I was blown away by the decadence of this high tea. So I've been writing a lot lately about high teas. No pressure, but there's one tomorrow. So
yes.
What is your affiliation with high tea?
High tea, I would say it's been with me for nearly, since I've started my chefing career in Australia. So having been spent nearly 7 years at the Mecca of high tea in Melbourne, that is Windsor,
Still, you know, now.
Yeah, absolutely.
From like the 50s, it's not just like
totally
popped up a high tea.
Totally, you know, that's when the journey started, the love of high tea, and ever since, I've grown in my career as well as a chef, the high tea has been with me. Having been worked with the Fairmont Raffles Hotel, which took me to the Savoy in London as well, you know.
That's probably one of the best high teas in the world.
Yes, absolutely. Then that's where the high tea was great. And when I worked in Singapore as well, got the opportunity to introduce high tea. I was there, which was fantastic, very successful. Having been opened the Sofitel in Chadstone, that's where I could introduce the high tea, which was not a part of plan. I remember during my the XCOM introduction to Mr. John Gandell, the owner of the hotel, I remember mentioning to him, Mr. Gandell, you don't have a pastry kitchen, you should have a high tea in your hotel, which is the hotel is very modern next to the fashion capital, Chadstone.
Perfect for shopping.
Absolutely. And he goes, till the time I can get a better high tea than what you have done before, you have it. And within days, I've got a new pastry kitchen. I designed the high tea stand. And now the high tea is one of the unique feature within the hotel. Having been worked in Langham, which is known for high tea as well, and the children's high tea, having been spent close to 3 years out there doing many different concept of high tea, the chocolate indulgence, the kids high tea, doing a few thousand kids during the kids' holiday, you know.
The Movenpick also has the chocolate happy hour.
Yes.
I think doing something like that, rather than just being a hotel somewhere you're staying, it makes it feel more like a home when you have a high tea.
Totally. It's a high tea, I would say, it's very close to Melbourne's heart. You know, there's many fantastic high tea venues in Melbourne, and there's many others coming in. They're trying to connect the high tea culture as well. It's definitely very important, and that's something we started here at the Pan Pacific Melbourne as well. Again, the story continues. We put in a brand new pastry kitchen here.
You bring the high tea with you.
I take the high tea with me. I think it's part of me now.
Do you like cooking pastries yourself? Is that in you?
I love pastry. I'm not a qualified pastry chef, but I would say that most of my time in the kitchen I spend in pastry and putting the menus together and working with the pastry chef to develop all the flavors and everything. Yeah, that's something I love it.
Yeah.
And the luxury part of high tea, the bespoke high tea, and the flair in the high tea service and the food, that's something always excites me. And always I look for the opportunity to introduce the high tea in the operation. When I spoke to my boss, the general manager, David Tonkin, I must say that we should have high tea out here. And he hands down, I got all the support from David and the owners as well to put the pastry kitchen together. And now we have a high tea we are very proud of. And within 3 weeks' time, we'll be having the brand new high tea stand, which I designed keeping in mind the hotel brand and work with a designer, and which is very bespoke looking, which will complement to our food as well. And I can't wait to have them.
What else could we find on the menu here?
Apart from the high tea, we run the breakfast operation that is at the Dock 37, and we close for lunch because we have a cafe, which is Cafe Or, which opens early in the morning and runs till 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then the cafe serves the tea and coffee and the cafe meal and the lunches as well. We open for dinner. And the dinner definitely is very much a restaurant style. In one sentence, I would say, where venue we celebrate Victorian produce.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's the produce is the hero. The basic cooking style is European, mm-hmm. and I love using the Australian indigenous product. You know, that's a unique thing which features in our menus and in our high teas as well. Not only in savory food, but also in desserts and high tea, petite.
Not just a Davidson plum scone.
We go beyond that. We use Geraldton wax. We use aniseed myrtle, lemon myrtle,
yeah.
And kakadu plum, wattle seed.
Name
the ingredient. You know, to be honest, that's something excites me. That's very close to Australia. That's something unique. What we have, what other part of the world they don't. You know, and being a Melbourne trained chef or Australian trained chef, I feel that's where we connect to the European cuisine and stand out as well.
I agree, and it's, you know, a connection to our land that we stand. You know,
absolutely, absolutely.
And I think if you're not going down that path in the future, you're just being left behind. That's my
totally.
Opinion, particularly, as I said to you, food is the connection with Melbourne, but food is the connection of our country. The only thing that I've always said to chefs, and all the chefs that are on my podcast in the last couple of years, are using indigenous ingredients in
totally.
Some way. Just not tokenism, you know, not just throwing the lemon myrtle in to the tea. Let's go further than that. Let's dig deeper down into
totally.
The seasons and understand why the indigenous, you know, were using the ingredients they were using for 60,000 years. So
absolutely.
It pleases me to hear that, because you are an Australian. You've been here a couple of decades now, right?
Yes.
Nearly 30 years?
Very close to 30 years now.
And how often would you go home?
I have visited last year, like half of my family, they live in London, and my parents, they live sometime in India, sometime with my brother or myself as well. So we make sure we will try and visit every year, because my in-laws are still in India as well. That's a connection I would like to keep it always, and also try to pass on to our kids as well.
Do you have children?
Yes, we got two. The son is 8 years old. My daughter is 1.5 years old.
Gorgeous.
And my wife is absolutely busy with two
busy
of them.
Life.
We have a busy life.
But guess what? It goes quick though, because I'm what they call an empty nester, which is a terrible word. But my children are 24 and nearly 22, and both living in Canada.
Oh, wow.
So it happens quick. They do their degrees and they leave.
Absolutely. To be honest, my 8 years old already started saying that I want to go to uncle in London and study out there. It definitely goes quick. And I was talking to my wife yesterday, and fortunately, she's from the hospitality industry as well. That's where we met, you know, that it till the time we can enjoy when they're home, let's enjoy this time. And it just goes quick.
That's true. It's hard at the time because it's busy, but when you look back, it actually goes quick.
Totally.
I don't know if you can learn that until you get to where I'm at now. Now, tell me, what does your dad think of your chosen career now?
He's quite happy. He's quite proud. It changed, I think, a couple of years after I came to Melbourne, when my photo was featured in the hospitality magazine and William Anglis as well.
Wow.
And I sent a snippet of it to my dad. I said, "Hey, Dad, I'm doing well out here." They put my photo and the interview out there. You know, that's the first time he said, "Son, I'm really proud of you.
Oh,
just follow your dream." I understand now. Just follow your dream.
Every time you do a podcast, you flick it to him.
I do. I must say, like since I've been cooking, you know, my family, my parents, and now my wife and my kids, they're the biggest fan of my cooking. You know, not being biased, they definitely have their criticism as well in some of the things. They've been very honest, but they always look forward to my food.
But you've got that nice mix of a chef that has a personality that wants to get out there, have a chat, but also still loves being on the tools. Because not every chef, like A, wants to be on the tools, which is interesting, and B, wants to be out there talking to people. But you seem to have the combination.
This is what I love about That's why I stuck to the hotel. It's not something you stick yourself just to the kitchen. And when I worked for a very luxury hotel resort for the Oberoi Hotels in India, which was voted second luxurious hotel in the world those days, that's somewhere the journey started. That's way back in 2007 when I was the executive chef there. Going out and talking to the guest, there was no set menu. Every day there was a new menu. Go to the farm, pick up your produce and write a menu for the day. And you go out, talk to the guest, explain the menu, and creating a wow experience. That's what the luxury hospitality all about. You find out a guest likes something and create that thing and create that experience. To be honest, that's something I love it. That's something I like, being in the hotel and meeting people and the happy face, you know. And making amenities for the guests, that's one of my favorite things to do working in the hotel, you know.
Well, that's luxury right there.
Absolutely.
That's what a luxe guest wants.
Totally. And honestly speaking, that's what I enjoy. And that's something which comes from the heart.
Nice.
It's been such a long time. I don't know how many more years I'll be cooking or being in food and beverage, but every day is a new day, and there's not even a single day I've regretted that why I'm a chef or why I'm here. totally. And we did go through a tough part during the COVID, but the whole world went through. Hopefully, we don't see that again. But honestly speaking, every day, I just love it.
It's really interesting. This happened to me not long ago as well. My son, who's living in Canada, who's a server at the Fairmont Hotel.
Oh, I work for the Fairmont, yes.
Yeah, so he's Fairmont in Lake Louise.
Okay.
He's never been happier serving luxe guest, and he's done a degree in economics and commerce.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, like, he does have that brain. Maybe he'll go back into finance. All I'm hearing as a mom, how happy he is. He said he loves serving these 8 tables, I think he gets each time. Mind you, he gets 20% on the bill. So the economist is working for him.
Yes.
But he also loves the interaction with the guest. Like, he likes to look after them, exactly what you said. And I think that's a skill. And if you're happy there, we need more hospitality people.
Absolutely. So this is something really great thing about hospitality. Many of the young ones now have a notion of thinking that hospitality is hard. You don't have a weekend. You don't have when people are enjoying your working. Honestly speaking, the industry is changing. We do believe in a work and life balance as well. As much as we can, we try and execute those things, not only for the team members, for us as well. And honestly speaking, in a positive note, I would say during the COVID, the amount of time I could spend with the family, I couldn't do that working in kitchen, being a chef. And that's something I loved it. And honestly speaking, that's something I felt like is something I was missing as well. And it's definitely achievable.
Well, that's something that really I always love about Melbourne. Hospitality is a career.
Yes.
You know, like, the barista takes it seriously. It's not just a passing. Other cities that I have lived in Australia, they weren't taking it as seriously as Melbourne does. Like, it's literally a career. And
totally.
That, and, you know, and they understand hospitality and tourism and events. This city does that incredibly well.
Totally, like we do it well, the events, the sports, the festivals, and that's something keeps the city alive. It's part of the culture, you know. If there's a barista takes pride of making the coffee, the coffee roaster that's coming more and more in Melbourne, they take pride of their roasting method as well.
Yeah.
And you can feel it. And the farmer who is producing one or two different produce, they take pride of their produce as well.
That's why you've chosen this city. I understand why you
chose
this city.
I love every bit of Melbourne.
It's really
you
nice
know.
To be back. I haven't been back for 2 years. A year and a half. But it's always home, as I said. And look what beautiful day it is today. The sun
totally.
Is shining.
You've got.
I was playing with my scarves and everything. I just threw them away. And went, no, I didn't.
You've got the sun from the breezy, you know.
I brought it down with me. Now, I always end my podcast with who and where inspires you around the world. It's a bit of a on the spot one. But is there a place that inspires you and a person that inspires you in your career?
See, if I name one or two, definitely I would like to name my mentors where I started really as a chef. His name is Tom Milligan. He's still my mentor. He's the president of the Bocuse d'Or. Now, apart from the Bocuse d'Or, he's the man behind me as a chef, where I started the fine cuisine. You know, like many of the chefs motivate me. Like Scotty, his passion for the Australian indigenous produce. Mm. Scott Brickett does it well. He motivated me and got me completely addicted to indigenous great produce, and I can't get over it. And I travel quite a bit. If I'm traveling a small country town, and a small producer can motivate me. Mm-hmm. And I just take my phone notepad and just write it down. The motivations are everywhere. That can be a farmer.
Is there a place that really inspires you?
My recent time in Singapore.
Okay.
The first Singapore food trend. I love it. The time when the Michelin guy got into Singapore, I was there. I was working for the Pan Pacific Hotel Group, and the food is known in Singapore. That's part of the culture, like Melbourne as well. The way the food trend changed in Hong Kong and Singapore as well, that's really world class at this moment. There's many other countries and cities in the world, but recent days going into Singapore, like the restaurant like Odette, Burnt End, and all the there's few other as well. They're doing fantastic.
Very contemporary. They haven't got produce per se. They're not growing a lot,
but they do get all the great produce around the world.
Yeah,
and one of the Aussie chef, Sri Lankan born as well, Rishi Nalendra, he's doing great with his Cloud Street kitchen there. He's got two Michelin now. And it's great, and how they're celebrating the best produce, the best wine and everything around the world. Though like Singapore doesn't produce much, you know, but they definitely get the best of the best produce what world can offer.
I agree with you. It's a very contemporary city.
Totally.
Super clean too.
You get into trouble.
You're just going to say that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Deepak Mishra.
Thank you.
For spending your time with me tonight. I have a feeling you might need to go and cook for another Deepak. and I'm going to go and find him. So thank you so much for your time. And I can't wait to indulge in the high tea tomorrow.
Thank you so much for talking to me. I look forward to serving you a high tea.
Thank you so much.
Likewise.
Ciao.